This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Welcome back to the fifth part in our series of debunking the Nancy Guthrie conspiracy theories. There's so many out there, and it's easy to fall down a trap of them. And it's not to say that all of them are completely wrong. Usually in any conspiracy theory, there's an element of truth, or there's elements, there's pieces here and there, scaffolding, if you will, that help make these theories believable. And that's what helps them get traction and continue to move forward. So if you've fallen down some of these rabbit holes, don't feel bad. We're here to discuss, to go, oh, okay, with more information, you can make better decisions. And you can think of things more clearly when you have more information. And if you're still stuck on one of these, if you're still saying, but wait, what about this? Then tell me in the comments section. I'll have a conversation about it. I'm not here to say you're stupid. I don't need you to hear to say I'm stupid. We're here to have a dialogue and communicate. That's the point of this, not to win the game of who can debunk the other fastest. So we're going to go into this one today, the ransom notes, and a theory that a lot of people are holding on to, that the ransom notes prove that she's still alive. Because that is alive and well in some areas of the internet. And I get it to a certain extent. It's a facet of hope. It's a lever of hope. And an empathetic person wants to pull that lever of hope. Even if the evidence points otherwise. Every other theory in this series has been relatively easy to debunk. The cartel jet was built on a coincidence and collapsed under the weight of real evidence. The healthcare fraud video fabricated a person's identity. The family conspiracy destroyed innocent people's lives and was killed by a definitive clearance. The protective custody theory required the entire federal government to be running a fake homicide investigation for an 80-some-year-old woman for some reason of a morning show host. Because, yes, that's what they do. Each of those theories was built by people turning a tragedy into content, or by people, as we just discussed, holding out hope even in areas that don't make a lot of sense. This one is a little different. The people who believe the ransom notes are real, who believe Nancy Guthrie is alive somewhere being held, and that the right negotiation could still bring her home, aren't necessarily building content. A lot of them are people who care about this family, who followed this case from the beginning, who light candles and post prayers and have not been able to let go of hope that this story doesn't end the way the evidence says it ends. That's not a character flaw. That's grief by proxy. That's the human inability to stop hoping when hope is the only thing left. And that's what makes this the hardest episode in the series, because what we're really doing is asking people to sit with facts they don't want to look at. One of these ransom note senders is already facing federal charges. And when you hear how lazy, how careless, how transparently opportunistic it was, it changes how you hear every ransom note that came after, at least what we know about some of them. Although there is a new ransom note in the fold that we'll touch on here in a moment. One that doesn't really ask for anything, but apparently gives an apology. There's another senator who told TMZ two things about Nancy in back-to-back messages, and they both can't be true. But let me walk you through what actually happened with the ransom notes as we understand them at this point in time, because the timeline matters. In the days after Nancy disappeared, multiple ransom demands surfaced. The first went to media outlets, TMZ, local news organizations, not directly to the family. The notes demanded millions in Bitcoin for Nancy's safe return. Some of them included details about the case that appeared specific enough to concern investigators initially. And in the vacuum of those early days, the notes felt like a lead. They felt like someone on the other end knew something. Savannah Guthrie acknowledged the notes publicly. She told the Today Show that she believed most of them were fake, but that two notes the family had received and responded to, she tended to believe those are real. The family offered to pay They said so publicly. They begged for proof of life, proof that their mother was alive and that paying the ransom would bring her back. No proof of life was ever provided. Every deadline passed, communication stopped, then restarted sporadically with shifting claims and new Bitcoin wallet addresses. The family never received what they asked for. The one thing they needed, evidence that Nancy was still alive, that never came. Let's talk about Derek Kalayla for a minute, because his arrest tells you everything about the kind of person who sends ransom notes in a case like this. On Friday, February 5th, 5 days after Nancy disappeared, the FBI arrested Kalayla, 42 years old, out of Hawthorne, California. He'd sent two text messages literally directly to Annie Guthrie and Tommaso Cioni the day before. The message read, "Did you get the Bitcoin? We're waiting on our end for the transaction." Sent them right after the Guthrie children posted a video on Instagram begging for their mother's safe return. Here's how the FBI found him. Kalayla used a VOIP app, a consumer service that lets you create a fake phone number. The app account was registered to his personal Gmail address, the IP address. The messages were sent from Trace to his home in California. When the FBI showed up and confronted him, Kalayla admitted to everything. His explanation for the federal complaint was trying to see if the family would respond. He had no connection to the kidnapping. He had no information about Nancy. He had never been to Tucson. He watched the news coverage, found the family's contact information on the internet, and decided to see if a grieving family would send him crypto. FBI agent in charge, Heath Janke, was direct at the press conference. "We believe there's no evidence to connect this to Nancy's case. It was someone that was trying to profit from it, a total imposter." Kalayla now faces federal charges, transmitting a ransom demand in interstate commerce and using a telecommunications device with intent to harass. His trial is set for a federal courthouse in Tucson. Here's what Kalayla's arrest really tells us, though, because he's not an outlier. He's a template. He demonstrated exactly how easy it is to send a ransom note in this case, and he did it so badly that he got caught within 24 hours. He used his own email address. He sent the message from his own phone. He confessed immediately. This is not a criminal mastermind. This is someone who saw an opportunity on television and took a shot. The other ransom notes, the ones sent to TMZ demanding Bitcoin, haven't been traced to specific individuals yet, but the pattern is identical. Messages sent to media outlets, not to the family directly. No proof of life. Deadlines that pass without consequence. Demands for Bitcoin, amounts that are far below the $1.2 million reward. That math is part of that should really make you think a little bit here, too. If you actually know where Nancy Guthrie is, if you have real information about her location or the identity of the person who took her, you don't demand one Bitcoin, which is worth roughly at this second 70 grand if you were to cash in at this day. You walk into the FBI field office and you claim over $1 million in reward money if you got the information. You do it legally with the FBI guaranteeing your anonymity and your payment. Reward is there. It's been there from the beginning. The only reason to go Bitcoin instead to demand a small, untraceable payment through a media intermediary is if you don't actually have anything to trade. You're rolling the dice on a small payout because you have nothing that would actually earn you the real one. Now, the senator contradicted himself. This is the detail that should have ended the story. The notes are real theory. The moment it happened, one anonymous sender who communicated through TMZ sent two messages. The first was blunt. She is dead. After TMZ founder Harvey Levin discussed the note on air, a second message arrived from the same sender. This one said, "I saw her alive with them in the state of Sonora, Mexico." Dead in one message, alive in the next. Same sender, same communication channel. You don't get to claim both. Coffin Daffer has been on the show a zillion times. One of our contributors, retired FBI special agent. Probably one of the people following this case closer than anybody. Someone who's investigated these kinds of cases for over two decades calls the ongoing ransom communication a campaign of terror against the Guthrie family. She pointed directly to the dead then alive contradiction is proof the sender has no real information. Her assessment, the senders are chasing a single Bitcoin instead of the massive reward because they're lying about having any real information. If they had something real, they'd claim the reward. The math only works if they're bluffing. The operational profile of these ransom notes doesn't match how real kidnap for ransom cases work. Another former FBI hostage negotiator, Chuck Veitchi, explained that in genuine ransom cases, the kidnapper contacts the family directly, privately. They don't go public. They don't want law enforcement involved. They provide proof of life early because it's leverage. It proves they have the person and can deliver on a deal. Everything about the Guthrie ransom notes is the opposite. Public, sent to the media rather than to the family. No proof of life. Communications through celebrity news intermediaries. That matches opportunism. It does not match kidnapping. I know that Savannah herself said she believed two of the notes were real. And they may not be any of the two we're talking about here. I'm not going to dismiss that. She's a smart person. She has information we do not have. And a daughter's instinct about the communication involving her mother carries weight. But everything that's happened since tells its own story, the things that we know about. No proof of life has ever materialized. The case has been reclassified as a homicide. As we covered in the previous episode, that's a legal determination with real consequences, not a label someone throws around. The forensic evidence points to a violent event at the residence. The investigation has shifted from recovery to prosecution preparation. The ransom note gives the family and the public something to hold on to. If someone has Nancy and wants money, she might still be alive. The right negotiation could bring her home. Letting go of that isn't an analytical exercise. It's one of the hardest things a person can be asked to do. And I'm not going to stand here and tell people their hope was stupid. It wasn't. It was human. But the evidence asks us to see those notes for what they are: opportunists with no connection to what happened, exploiting the worst moment of a family's life for crypto payouts they'll never collect because they have nothing real to offer. This is where the series here that we've done this week lands. Five theories: cartel jet to Mexico, internet's evidence factory, the family conspiracy, government cover-up, the ransom proof of life. Each one in its own way was an attempt to make this case into something other than what the evidence says it is, something bigger, or something with a villain you can name, something where maybe this wasn't some pointless accident that should have never taken place by someone who was out for something other than abducting an 80-some-year-old grandmother. Or something with an end that doesn't break your heart. The evidence says an unprepared individual showed up at an 84-year-old woman's door in the middle of the night. He didn't know the camera was there. He improvised. He's never been in the criminal justice system. The ransom notes came from people who had no connection to what happened. The case is now a homicide investigation, and Nancy Guthrie has not been found. The instinct to investigate isn't the problem. The instinct to hope isn't the problem. The problem is when the theories start mattering more than the facts, when real people, the family, the teacher in Tucson, investigators doing real work, get buried under speculation that a single phone call, a single verified source, a single 10-second search could have stopped before it spread. The reward stands at $1.2 million. If you have real information, not a theory, not a hunch, not something from a comment section, call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. There's new reporting about a note. And I won't even say it's a ransom note, because it's not a ransom note. It's reporting that one of the notes that came through early on was an apology, that it went horribly wrong. And the response that Savannah and her family were giving, the note that we did not have access to the reading of at that moment in time, speaks to that note. It speaks to someone with empathy. It speaks to someone who is sending an apology. Now, is that note real? Is that just someone sending a note saying it went horribly wrong and they have no information? Yes, it could totally be that too. But it could also line up with what actually happened. Nancy was never the intended target. That's where my gut lands at this moment in time. Tell me where yours does. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'd love for you to weigh in. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.